On a steamy November day in 1535 at the Mexican seaport of Veracruz, a sturdy boy led his mules to and from the shore, where barges landed supplies from anchored cargo ships. He was Garcilaso, 10 years old, but soon to be 11, as he told anyone who cared to listen. The illegitimate child of an Indian mother and a rebellious Spanish soldier, who was executed before the woman gave birth, he was soon abandoned, placed in a home that was run by the local clergy, and then turned over to a rascally muleteer as soon as he was old enough to work. That occurred at age 8, and he had been working ever since. On this hot morning he had to labor especially hard, for his master had received instructions that the mules must leave immediately for the capital, Mexico City, La Ciudad de México, more than 100 leagues distant, 1 league being 2.86 miles, and whenever heavy work was required in a hurry, the ill-tempered man rained blows upon the boy. From his father, Garcilaso had inherited a build somewhat heftier than that of the average Indian. From his mother, the smooth brown skin and the black hair that cut across his forehead in a straight line, reaching down almost over his eyes. And from some mysterious source, he had acquired a placid disposition and an incurable optimism. Now, as he loaded his mules with the last of their cargo and headed them toward that long and tedious trip through the lowland jungles, he consoled himself with the thought that soon he would see the majestic volcanoes of the high plateau, and shortly thereafter the exciting streets of the capital. As he left the port city, he hummed a song he had learned from other muleteers. Clip, clop, clip, clop. There in the sky, the great volcanoes of the plain. Go, mules! Speed, mules, for here come I to climb their lovely path again. He had memorized a dozen such songs, one for the mules when they were sick, one for dawn over the pyramids, one for a husband and wife tilling their fields of corn. Since he could not read and had no prospect of ever learning, for he was enslaved to his mules, he used his whispered songs as his Bible and his dictionary. Clip-clop, clip-clop. The smoke I see marks where the town hides in the veil. Go, mules, speed, mules, be kind to me, and you shall find oats in your pail. Each trip up from Veracruz was a mixture of drudgery and joy, for although traversing the jungle along poorly kept trails was quite difficult, to travel beside the volcanoes and to see the capital looming in the distance was rewarding, especially since he knew that when he reached it, he could count upon a few days of rest and better food. So he kept singing. On this trip, as he approached the capital, he found his mules competing for road space with unaccustomed hordes of travelers, all going in his direction. And when he asked, "What happens?" he was told, "An auto da fe tomorrow, a great auto." This was exciting news, for it meant that the streets would be crowded, and that vendors of sweetmeats and tips of roasted beef would be hawking their wares. He himself would have no money to buy such luxuries, but he could rely upon convivial participants to provide him with morsels here and there. An auto in Mexico City, in the cool month of November, could be a memorable affair. A formal auto de fe, act of faith, as conducted in Spain, could be a lavish public display of the spiritual glory and temporal power of the Catholic Church in its determination to root out any deviation from the true faith. It consisted of marching soldiers, military bands, a parade of clerics in four or five differently colored robes, the appearance of the bishop himself, riding in a palanquin borne by four Negro slaves, and the final appearance of an executioner, leading in chains the apostates who were to be burned that day. But in Mexico, in these early years, an auto was a much simpler affair. On this occasion, as Garcilaso learned on entering the city, two men were to be executed. But, as his informant explained, their cases were quite different.